Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan on News Talk.
Gangland informants who provide valuable intelligence, information to the guards on any form of organised crime activity, should be permitted to commit criminal offences in certain circumstances. This is a recommendation. It's a report from the Garda Inspectorate. And the idea is really that, you know, this sort of would mirror systems in other countries that allow law enforcement to sanction certain illegal conduct by intelligence sources in order to try and dismantle the larger, the bigger criminal organisations. And I want to know how people feel about this proposed idea today. Nicola Tallant, who's the host of the Crime World podcast and investigations editor with the Sunday World, is with us on the show. Nicola, you might just explain, first of all, how something like this would work.
Well, it will have to be brought into legislation because the covert human intelligence sources, as they're called, the informants, are governed by a 2009 Act, the Criminal Justice Act, and it doesn't enable at the moment as we stand for them to be permitted to participate in criminal activity. So it's slightly illogical that they aren't, you know, it's very backwards. We're looking at a situation where the only really decent, proper intelligence coming from criminal organisations are coming from within them. And, you know, a source cannot remain within a criminal organisation, obviously, without committing some crime. Now, there has to be a cap on what level of criminality is allowed, etc. But the fact of the matter is, a covert individual operating in a criminal gang is refusing to commit any crime is of no use or value to anybody, certainly not the criminal gang. So they won't be permitted to remain in a position where they can, you know, where they can garner intelligence which can be of use in the bigger picture.
So just, sorry, Nicola, just to sort of explain this in you know, in a kind of a, well, layman's terms or a basic mm-hmm. level. So this is somebody who is currently a member of an organised gang. We'll say, for sake of argument, the plan is they're carrying out a robbery. They inform somebody in the intelligence unit or, you know, whoever, the guard that they know about this. They obviously have to go, you know, they go along with the robbery for fear of perhaps outing themselves a reprisal. Is the idea that because they've alerted the guards to this or intelligence sources that they wouldn't be reprimanded? Or is it that, you know, it's a trade-off of information?
A little bit more structured than that. It used to be a much more loose situation that certain people involved in crime, and they don't necessarily have to be part of the gang, they could be part of the logistics system, you know, the transport, whatever, that they used to kind of know guards, and there used to be this kind of loose arrangement that information would be passed. But since 2009, this is all, you know, properly organised. So if somebody comes to a member of the guards and say that they have information they think is valid, they're actually sent to a separate unit. They don't deal with their mate or whoever they know who's the guard. They're given and handled by a completely separate unit who assess them, you know, for their how valuable they are. And they're put on this actual system called CHIS. So if they have information, it's complex. Like, obviously, if you have somebody, if it's a four-man gang going into a robbery, that's all very secretive, and all of a sudden the guards are waiting for them, that's a bit obvious that one of those four are probably giving information in some way. So it's a little bit more complex than that. But basically, the plan would be, and this goes on in other countries, that they can engage in certain amounts of criminality. Like, sometimes the Gardaí, if they're watching a grouping, will allow a certain amount of drugs into the country, you know, while they sit back and wait for the bigger load, which is probably, you know, the bigger haul. So that kind of a situation could emerge, and they could be allowed to engage in the transportation of drugs or whatever it is. You know, in the past and from other countries, let's take Whitey Bulger, for example, the famous Boston mobster of Irish descent, who was working as an informant for years, sort of off the books as such. And there was a huge scandal around that because he was basically let get away with murder. I mean, there'd be no way in a system that's, you know, that's in the legal system that somebody would be allowed to participate in something as serious as murder. So there would be a level and a cut-off point of what kind of criminality you'd be allowed to participate in and to what end. You know, it couldn't be just for financial gain. It would have to be because there would be an end point which would be of benefit to the state.
And just, I suppose, just Nicola, before a couple of other people I want to bring in on this too, but just, I suppose, to clarify, this is something that happens in other European countries to a greater extent, and I take it that's why we're looking at this here.
It happens pretty much everywhere, as far as I would know. I mean, like, say, let's look at the States, for example. I mean, they have a budget of about $600 or $800 million for informants working with the FBI. And they would be, there was some statistics given in Forbes a number of years ago, which shows that of those informants, that they're all on the payroll, like, so they're making money. There obviously has to be some sort of an incentive for people to give information to a police force. You know, it's a dangerous thing to do.
Absolutely.
But of that, there was something like 30,000 crimes sanctioned. Like, so they're legally sanctioned. You know, they can't just commit them because they're going ahead. They have to kind of be sanctioned, the crimes that they're going to commit. And again, it has to be for the greater good at the other end of it. You know, that it'll be the takedown of an organised crime group, or, you know, a kind of a long-term takedown of some grouping. Like, for example, the Kinahans. We see how long that takes.
Yeah.
It's not a simple process.
So that might be, we'll just say for sake of argument, you know, maybe in years to come, or you know, in a different organisation, something like this might assist the intelligence sources or the guards in trying to dismantle something like that. Christy is with us on the line, Nicola. Christy's a retired Garda sergeant based in Donegal. Would you approve of something like this, Christy?
Yeah, well, there is an issue both ethically and legally in the use of, it's kind of a grey area for the Garda Síochána too. But ever since the Act of 2009 that Nicola referred to came into being, it stopped members of the criminal fraternity who are used, part of CHIS, for participating in criminal activity. Now, the Gardaí can't oversee everybody who's a member of CHIS, whether or not they're involved in criminal activity or not. And I mean, that's the reality of it. The reality is out there. Now, mostly what they were handling when CHIS started first, because of the Morris Tribunal, really, this is the recommendation from Morris Tribunal that CHIS was set up in the first place. But the inspector themselves in 2014 found that the referrals that came And the inspector, the analysis of the effectiveness of CHIS was very worrying, because they said there was no actionable or useful intelligence on volume crime being returned to districts or divisions. And volume crime refers to like burglaries and thefts and assaults. And it said at the time that it must comply, that it should comply with the legal requirements for tight control and human rights.
How do you trust an informant? Like, you're taking them at their word.
That's the very thing. I've used informants over the years in relation to criminal activity over the years. And you have to second-guess them. And that's the job of the CHIS now, but most Garda members. Now, you'll have the ordinary member of the public who has no axe to grind with anybody who will give you a bit of information. That's grand. But when you're dealing with, say, terrorist sources, or you're dealing with serious criminal sources, you have to be very wary of what it is, because these can be challenged in court where you've got this, and we have a number of cases before the courts where informants or information gleaned from informants was challenged by plaintiffs.
And what gain has the informant in passing on this information, Shirley?
Well, the gain is that, and we saw a case many years ago, and it was a major, he was a drug trafficker who was being used by one of the Garda, the intelligence services, the Garda Síochána, were using it as a source of information.
Okay.
He was subsequently arrested by the Garda Drugs Unit, National Drugs Unit, but a file was sent to the DVP and he wasn't prosecuted, which caused crazy consternation at the time. Like,
okay.
You know, people
I suppose the thing being, though, it's probably very difficult, I imagine, for members of the intelligence sources or anybody working in intelligence and the guards to, you know, ascertain how much of this information is genuine or
so
being handed over for other motivations. Let me bring in Kathleen for a moment, Christy. Kathleen Chadd is the co-founder of the Save Action Group, of course, a sentencing and victim equality group. Like, a crime is still a crime, Kathleen, I imagine, you know, for you and others listening to this today, for whatever the reasons it's allowed to be carried out.
And look, at the emotional and instinctual reaction is absolutely not. It should never happen. You know, why should somebody be given any concession, if you like, if they've carried out a crime and knowingly carried out a crime? But I do recognise, there is a bigger picture here. And I suppose you are trying to get to the bigger organisations, if you like, particularly when it comes to gangland crime. But, you know, my fear on this is a little bit maybe on what Chris, you touched on. How is it going to be managed? How will it be monitored? How, you know, what are the consequences of the victims of the crime that was carried out by a perpetrator who is potentially not going to be prosecuted for it because of that bigger picture? So there's a huge amount that would need to be considered and thought through on something like this. As I say, I know that there's a bigger picture, and you know, I suppose I always like to think that I'm balanced enough to see that. But I would be fearful of it. You know, as I say, my initial instinct was no way. And then you kind of look at it and you go, well, okay, there are potential benefits to it. But as I say, there's still going to be victims. There's no such thing as a victimless crime. So, you know, if these perpetrators are going to be carrying out offences literally under the noses of the Gardaí and the justice system, if you like, knowing that they may not be prosecuted for it because of other, I suppose, work that they're doing, that they're possibly even going to be paid for. What about the victims in those cases? And that's where I suppose I'd be coming from.
That is a very difficult balance, Nicola, isn't it, to try and get right in this?
Look, when it comes to organised crime, the Garda Síochána and other forces across the world are not on an even playing pitch. They're constantly on the back foot because there are no rules where the criminals are concerned, and there's a huge burden of proof for ordered society to bring somebody to justice. And the fact of the matter is that without somebody who is embedded within a gang and working with them, there is no point in having an informant. I mean, I would be no use as an informant because I'm not embedded in a gang. And it's just, yes, there's a balance, but I mean, we are so far behind on this that we don't even have this, in legislation. As far as I can see, as it currently stands, if a CHIS informant commits a crime, they're off the CHIS system. So it's a completely useless system, basically, without allowing the informant to sort of operate within the gang. There's no crime that's victimless, obviously. But again, as I said, there would be levels that would be acceptable within the system. You're not going to allow an informant go out and commit murder. You're not going to allow, certain levels of criminality. But you do have to allow some level of criminality in order to get the information, to start that dismantling process of the likes of a cartel. And we see from that Kinahan cartel, we are now 8 years and still working on the dismantling of that grouping. So it's quite an impossible task to expect law enforcement to go out under under just our moral code and the laws of the land without sort of bending or twisting it slightly to give them a little bit of an advantage over the criminals.
Niall Spellman is listening to this today. Niall's the former assistant governor of Wheatfield Prison. Is this something, Niall, that you would have, welcomed in any way in your time?
Good afternoon, Andrea. I suppose this is really a case of the two Irelands, Official Ireland and Real Ireland. Official Ireland says this is something that should be done. Real Ireland, it goes on, but not the high levels, say, that Nicola is talking about. Every good prison officer would have their sources within the prison of different levels of information. Why does somebody become an informant? They have to have a motive for it. If you're looking at a high level of organised crime, there is no motive for those people, because whatever money may be paid isn't on a par with what money that they're making. And it was a very high-profile case, a murder trial in the Special Criminal Court last year.
We might just get you, if you don't mind, Niall, just maybe not to go into, you know, the details of it as such by way of names. But your argument is that, like, is it kind of, how do you decide what's the lesser of evils here?
Well, within the prison context, we keep to there, you base the information on, it has to trust you, that if they give you information, that it won't come back on them. Because within the prison system, the lowest of the low is what is known as a rat or an informant. Most prisoners would count rats as being lower than rapists, but prisons survive on information. So what is their motive? To make life easier for themselves, or even sometimes because the prisons are awash with contraband and drugs and things, sometimes it's to take the heat off them. There was a very significant find of drugs and weapons and phones last week, but that took a huge amount of coordination and resource staff to go in and get it. Mm. But that was based on intelligence, information, some of which would have been sourced from prisoners. The unfortunate thing is if they went back in again today, they'd find just as much stuff. But it is, what is the motive? So the motive within prison is very different to the motive outside of prison. But on an organised crime level, I mean, within the organised crime gangs, if somebody is brought into custody and they're served with a book of evidence, whoever is running the gang in that prison, the first thing they do is they demand that prisoner gives them the book of evidence. And unless it's no comment or no reply to every single question, that prisoner is in mortal danger. I mean, people are being killed and badly beaten for small amounts, but if somebody suspects that information has been given that somebody's a rat, that's a death sentence.
I've no doubt, Kathleen, this is very difficult, and even I was reading the headline of this, you know, in the Times, and I was just thinking, like, it must be extraordinarily hard for victims, families of victims, to try and comprehend, you know, I suppose, that, if you want to call it a deal, but how a deal like this could be struck,
and it is, and that's what I say. It's you know, there's a bigger picture here, I suppose. And you have to look at the benefit. I know through SAVE and the work we do, and, you know, there's work that we're doing within the Department of Justice at the moment, you know, a number of families. And it is, I've always said, if you put the victim at the heart of the justice system, you'll have a fair and just system. For me, I'm thinking in terms of, again, I go back to, there's no such thing as a victimless crime. So no matter what is carried out, there is a victim somewhere, whether they're within the criminal element of that or not, whether it's deserved or not. But as a victim and as families of victims, you know, and many, many, many innocent victims, and certainly the families are, you know, you have to have some, I suppose, you have to have trust in the system.
Yeah.
And it's hard when you see a headline like this. Now, you know, I suppose time has taught me that the headline isn't always, you know, the truth, if you like, or what's actually behind it. So I'd like to think in this case there is a bigger picture. Mm.
Well, as I said, it is, I suppose, a recommendation that something that is going to, you know, for certain be enacted into law. Kathleen Chadha, listen, Kathleen, thank you for joining us in the programme. That's Niall Spellman, Christy as well in Donegal, and Nicola Tallant, who's the host of Crime World podcast and investigations editor with The Sunday World.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday on News Talk.